Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much for tuning in to spend some time with me and the show. Today, I've got a show about compulsory surveillance. This is a concept that I'm going to unpack a little bit as we go through the show. Surveillance is a topic that I've covered, obviously, a number of times in the past on the show, but there's an additional dimension to this that caught my eye in the past week when I came across this clip of RFK Jr. at an official government meeting where he was describing his plans or his vision, as he put it, for Americans' health and the relationship of Americans and their health with technology. And I'm speaking in vague terms here. It's probably better if I just play this clip. It's pretty short. It's only 23 seconds, but I want you to listen to this, and this is going to help kick off this conversation for today's show. Here it is. This is RFK Jr. from June
24, 2025. Their diet, about their physical activity, about the way that they live their lives.
I'm going to try that. I'm going to cue that up again because that didn't come out quite right. Here, let's try this again.
Diet, about their physical activity, about the way that they live their lives. We think wearables are a key to the MAHA agenda, making America healthy again. And we are going to, my vision is that every American is wearing a wearable within 4 years.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Every American is wearing a wearable within 4 years. Okay, so this is someone from the current administration of the current occupant of the White House saying something pretty remarkable, that his vision for this nation of over 300 million citizens is that all of us are going to be outfitted with wearable surveillance gear in the next 4 years. Now, of course, a lot of these officials will say these provocative things that are never going to come to pass. And he obviously didn't say that this was a plan on the books, but rather it was a vision. However, I think it says something when one of the top officials says that his vision is for all of us to be wearing surveillance gear within a few years. And there's all sorts of suppositions about who is going to be selling into the government contracts, who is an owner or investor in companies, who stands to benefit financially. We could do a whole segment on that, but that's not my concern right now. Let's just pretend that no one is having undue influence on this decision. Just the fact that a government official would say those words out loud is an indication of where we are headed. Now, let me just say, for anybody who doesn't know or maybe hasn't listened to the show very much, the idea of wearables, these wearable surveillance rings and wristbands and so on, is that your health is then tracked by these devices. And then the data that comes off of your health markers is then uploaded into the cloud, where some third-party company, often in partnership with or owned by one of the toxic big tech monsters, monopolies, is then drawing inferences from that data and is able to then add to your private dossier that they collect on you all the time, whatever they're getting from your health. Now, the government getting access to this is even more interesting. We've seen more of a partnership over the years between the U.S. government and big tech surveillance capitalists, and this shows yet another step of that process. If hundreds of millions of Americans are going to be outfitted with these surveillance devices, now the reason why I really thought that this was remarkable, that I wanted to build a show around that one little clip, that the idea, the central idea of that clip, is that the vision is not that the government would make these devices available to citizens, but it was the word all. The word all is so important there. What RFK Jr. is saying is that the vision is for surveillance devices where the government has access to your health data and any inferences that come off of that goes to all of us, and that means these devices become compulsory. And this is a step in the evolution of surveillance gear, surveillance technology that we've seen a number of times, where when a surveillance technology is first launched, first, it's presented as this aspirational device that you have to pay up and you have to be one of the cool people even to get access to this thing. And then it becomes sort of more popular and you see a lot of people using it. And then finally, it goes to the last stage, which is if you are not using it, you are considered strange or you are ostracized or life in society becomes more difficult. And that is the arc that surveillance phones have taken. If you want to go to a number of concert venues, if you want to go to major sports arenas or ballparks, a lot of times you need a surveillance phone in order to scan a QR code or present your digital tickets or what have you. I was recently at an airport and there were signs already up saying pretty soon you're not going to need to have your physical identification card, your driver's license or whatever it is. You can use your phone. And I thought, one more step to having us be compelled, to be required to walk around with surveillance phones with our identity on them. And seeing this clip from RFK Jr. fit right into that it's not simply surveillance phones. It could be devices that are monitoring your private health data that eventually becomes compulsory by the government. Let's move on to some other examples. I don't want to belabor this 1:23-second clip, but I think it set up an interesting theme. As I went through recent news, I realized I'm seeing signs of compulsory or near compulsory surveillance technology in many quarters. There was a 404 Media story on June 26, 2025, about ICE, this agency that is kidnapping so many people and instrumental in the deportations that have been ordered by the current occupant. The headline, this is written by Joseph Cox in 404 Media. The headline is, ICE is using a new facial recognition app to identify people. Leaked emails show. And the excerpt here is that the new tool is called Mobile Fortify. It uses the CBP system, which ordinarily takes photos of people when they enter or exit the U.S., according to these leaked emails. Now, this is the key, now ICE is using it in the field, which means, in practice, that what you used to see is that at Customs and Border Patrol at an airport, let's say, you would see cameras trained on citizens and non-citizens and running facial rec in order to conduct some sort of identification of these people coming into the country or coming back into the country. And I have concerns about that, but at least that was restricted to a border crossing. Now what we're seeing is that the facial rec is breaking out of that and is being used in a handheld device that is mobile. And so the way it works is that ICE agents will walk through public and they will train the camera that is connected to this facial rec software. They'll train that camera on anyone and everyone that they pass by and get a facial rec identification on the fly. And keep in mind, this is not simply to get someone's name, it's to identify them and then bring up all of the other data in the dossier that the government has been collecting on that individual. And if there is some algorithm that raises a red flag, whether it's just or not, fair or not, legal or not, ICE then is liable to kidnap the person, throw them in the back of the van. And I've seen the same stories many of you have, that many of these ICE agents don't identify themselves. Many of them are masked. And so you see clips of people who are swarmed by masked, unidentified men. They're kidnapped and thrown into a van, and then they're disappeared. And now this mobile facial rec is making it that much easier for those kidnappings and deportations to take place. It's truly chilling. Because now when you walk down the street, it's not some hacker or jokester who's cobbled together a facial rec system like we talked about a few weeks ago. These Harvard students had put this together that might in an edge case identify you somewhere. No, these are ICE agents who can be walking around in public, or let's say in protests against the current occupant, and identifying people and deciding if they want to carry out a kidnapping on the spot. It's bad. And so that is compulsory in the sense that we are now all subject to this new surveillance technology that had not been present before and has never been present in this country's history. It's not just government. Let me move on to the next story. And by the way, let me just take a moment to tell you, there's a bunch of stories that I'm covering, a bunch of headlines and news. All of this is on the playlist. If you want to check the playlist, go to tectonic.fm, tectonic.fm, and click the playlist link for the compulsory surveillance episode. And you can see all the links there. There's also the playlist starts with a photo of RFK Jr. saying that every American is wearing a wearable within 4 years. Okay, let's go to the next story. Next story is about Reddit. Okay, Reddit has been really helpful to many internet users in recent years as a major monopolistic search engine quality has gone down. As I'll just say it, as Google has embraced AI slop as part of its strategy and has, by some accounts, has intentionally made its own search results worse in order to keep people on the site longer. A lot of people have been just prepending their search queries with the word Reddit, hoping to get their answers on the Reddit site among the many conversations and forum posts over the years. And the nice thing about Reddit is that you can go, you can click in real quick, you can check a form, and you can get out without having to log in and go through a login wall, let alone a paywall. And Reddit, this story in Semaphore reports that Reddit is considering making just a slight change to that arrangement. This is by Reed Albergati in Semaphore from June 2025. The headline is, Reddit in talks to embrace Sam Altman's iris scanning orb to verify users. Okay, if you don't know about this, okay, so Sam Altman is the CEO of OpenAI. That's the company that makes ChatGPT. And he's always in the news trying to raise more money for OpenAI and making these grand, overblown pronouncements about how AI is going to change the world and we all need to embrace it and so on. What many people don't know is that Sam Altman has a side gig, a different company that runs this orb, this chrome sphere that scans people's eyeballs, and they have been trying to roll this out worldwide. Now, there's a number of countries now that are already have put the orb under investigation because there's all sorts of untoward behavior and possible illegal activities going on in various countries due to this orb and its surveillance. But what is happening here is that Sam Altman not only wants to bring the eyeball scanning orb into the US, but it wants to make Reddit users have to scan their eyeballs in order to identify themselves for Reddit if they're going to be anonymous, which, of course, takes the word anonymous right out of it. So the excerpt is, Reddit is considering using World ID, the verification system based on iris scanning orbs, whose parent company was co-founded by Sam Altman, According to two people familiar with the matter, World ID could soon become a way for Reddit users to verify that they are unique individuals while remaining anonymous on the platform. I love this. I love this idea. If you want to remain anonymous, please go ahead and scan your iris in our eyeball scanning sphere. How does that sentence make a whit of sense? I don't know. But apparently Reddit is in talks to do this, and if Reddit signs on, no doubt there will be other companies that sign on to say, sure, you can be anonymous. Please go ahead and scan your eyeball. If that takes place, again, this is not a plan yet, but it is a kind of a vision, much like what RFK Jr. was saying. This is a possibility in the next 4 years that more and more sites could be requiring some kind of biometric scan in order to use their site at all. If the internet turns into a fully surveilled space where you have to scan your eyeball, or you have to scan your face, or you have to scan your DNA or something just to look up a stupid Reddit forum, we're in a world of hurt, friends. Because it's not about Reddit. It's about, if that becomes the norm, then we have yet again reached a new level of compulsory surveillance. Because what are you going to do? Now you're going to say, no, I want to remain anonymous. I don't want to scan my body in order to look up a stupid answer online. Now, are you going to then opt out of using the internet ever, at all, forever? That's the scary prospect here. The compulsory tech makes it very difficult to opt out. It assesses a cost for everyone who stands up and says, I'm not doing this. Let's move on to Google. There's a site called Futurism, which I always enjoy the headlines that Futurism comes up with. And there was a good one on June 27, 2025. And the headline is, Google sends out bizarre email saying AI will now control your phone's apps. So let me back up here just a little bit. Now we're getting into AI, okay? AI is closely bound up in surveillance technology. The companies that are behind AI, like Google, like Facebook, are deeply concerned with surveillance, in that they want to spread surveillance through their networks and their empires as broadly and as intensively as possible. And so Google is, of course, looking for ways to bring AI and its attendant surveillance powers into its own ecosystem. And one of the main parts of the Google surveillance ecosystem is its own surveillance phones. You know, there's Apple surveillance phones, and there are Google surveillance phones. And so the Google surveillance phones run Android. Android is the operating system that's owned and run by Google, and it's there to enhance the surveillance that Google is able to carry out on the surveillance phone that's running Android. And so here's what this article says. Here's an excerpt. Android users, that is to say users of Google surveillance phones, have begun receiving ominous emails warning that Gemini, Google's proprietary large language model, Gemini is basically Google's version of ChatGPT. Gemini will soon be able to, quote, help you with apps like phone, messages, and WhatsApp. WhatsApp, of course, is a Facebook property that also is deeply tied up in surveillance. Crucially, the emails note that Gemini will be able to help users regardless of, quote, whether your Gemini app's activity is on or off, which prompted some understandable anxiety. So basically what happened is that Google surveillance phone users, many of them got this pop-up announcement not long ago saying basically, hey, it's your buddies at Google. We're going to be surveilling you with our new AI system, and there's nothing you can do about it. In fact, let me just read you the announcement. I'm going to read it to you verbatim, and you can see what you think. The announcement says, we've made it easier for Gemini to interact with your device. We're updating how Gemini interacts with some of the apps on your Android device. What's changing? Gemini will soon be able to help you use phone, messages, WhatsApp, and utilities on your phone, whether your Gemini app's activity is on or off. So the translation is, go ahead and if you can find it, try to find a setting where you turn off Gemini app's activity. We're still going to be surveilling you. Yeah. Oh, did we say surveilling? We meant helping. We're going to be helping you. That is to say, we'll be helping ourselves to your data. And so this is another step towards compulsory surveillance. One of the most powerful companies in human history has just announced to users, we will be surveilling you through the phone that already is larded down with an incredible amount of surveillance. We're going to be increasing that with our introduction of AI, and there is nothing you can do about it. But don't worry, it's helping you. Now, some users have reported that somewhere deep in the fine print, Google reluctantly mentions that there kind of, sort of, might be some way to actually possibly turn this off, and people have gone on multiple wild goose chases trying to find the actual setting somewhere in the bowels of Google's dashboards, and some people have told, they have told legends of a setting that exists out there somewhere that may or may not work, but seems to have a wording that is pertinent vaguely to this matter. So if you would like an extremely boring adventure, try to find the setting that actually will turn off the thing that Google says you can't turn off, and it'll be totally pointless. But at least you get a story out of it. So there's Google. So we have Google with compulsory surveillance on Google phones. You have Sam Altman from OpenAI with a possibility of compulsory surveillance blocking you from using Reddit or other sites unless you scan your eyeball. We've got ICE with compulsory surveillance as they walk through the streets, identifying citizens without their knowledge or consent and possibly taking out likely illegal actions on top of that. And then we have RFK Jr., of course, saying his vision is for compulsory surveillance gear to be worn by every American within 4 years. Do you see the pattern? I hope you see. This is why I was interested in presenting this to you today, friends, because these are all signs from government officials to the richest tech billionaires to the most influential and powerful companies in the world, all seeming to be aligned on this idea that they all want to bring compulsory surveillance to you and your family and your community. We should all be concerned. Let's move on to Facebook Meta. I mean, wherever there is bad tech news, Mark Zuckerberg hates being in last place. He wants to have the worst announcement. Whatever Google does, he wants to be more toxic. You're going to have to be the judge of this, friends. It's kind of a toss-up who is being worse here, Google or Facebook Meta. This is another story from our friends at 404 Media. This actually was written by a past guest on the show, Jason Kubler, from June 17, 2025. The headline is, Meta invents new way to humiliate users with feed of people's chats with AI. Okay, so Facebook Meta, like every other toxic big tech monopoly, is out there jamming AI into every corner of their products and platforms, saying, please, 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 please use our AI surveillance engine because it is so awesome. It's going to revolutionize everything and it'll let us spy on you better. They don't say the other part out loud, but it's there. And so Facebook has this AI system that they really want people to use. And so in the kind of logic that can only come out of the empire of Mark Zuckerberg, the team there at Facebook Meta thought, you know, it would be a great idea to motivate people to use our AI surveillance platform is to take some of the queries that people type into the AI and make them public for the entire world to see. That sounds like a great idea. Won't people be excited to have their prompts not only surveilled by us, but then shared out to everyone else? And this is what Jason Kubler found. So there's some tab on Facebook. I don't use Facebook, so I haven't been able to go myself, but Jason Kubler is awesome. So I'm going to read you what he said. Here is what the Discover tab is. The Meta AI app, which is the company's competitor to the ChatGPT app, is posting users' conversations on a public Discover page where anyone can see the things that users are asking Meta's chatbot to make for them. Okay, so there's this Discover tab that is giving examples of people's private queries. Okay, so Kebler continues. In several minutes last week, I saved a series of these chats. These included entire communications about, quote, my current medical condition, which I could tie back to a real human being with one click. Details about someone's life insurance plan. Details about a situation gone wrong after a woman did not like a gift. An older disabled man wondering whether he could find and, quote, afford a young wife in Medellin, Colombia on his salary, quote, I'm at the stage in my life where I want to find a young woman to care for me and cook for me. I just want to relax, et cetera, et cetera. These are very personal queries that people are going to Facebook Meta, I would believe with good intentions, and without their knowledge or consent, Mark Zuckerberg's team has decided to take those private queries and blast them across the internet, or at least to people who unfortunately are continuing to use Facebook and find themselves on the, quote, Discover tab. They should call it AI surveillance without consent tab, although I guess that was too long for a tab. And so here we have surveillance that is compulsory, even if users are unaware. And yes, I'm sure the Facebook team put in some fine print somewhere like, we're going to help you by exposing any and all of your queries to the rest of the world. But I'm sure they put it in a way and put it in a place where people are not going to notice it. And by the way, why are they doing it at all? There's no excuse to say, well, we put a warning up. You shouldn't be doing it at all. But, you know, what am I saying? Facebook Meta is just, it's beyond any kind of reform. So you can't, it's like getting mad at a ham sandwich. It's just, there's no point. You know that they're going to be spying on you, and you know, under Mark Zuckerberg's leadership, they're going to try to do the worst thing possible, and they're going to try to out-toxify Google, which, you know what, I'm going to give it to you. You win, Zuck. You out-toxified Google this time. Amazing. So we have this question, like, what is it about AI and surveillance that these companies continue to try to make compulsory? Why is it? Is it just because they're creepy? Is it because they're making more money somehow, or they're monetizing it? Why this incredible investment of time and energy in rolling out surveillance and making it required for citizens? There was this great piece by Cory Doctorow, past guest on the show, from June 26, 2025, is called Surveillance is Inequality's Stabilizer. And I would recommend that you go and read the whole thing. It's, I don't know, I didn't count. It's maybe 1,200 words or something, 1,500 words. He goes into great detail about how surveillance is used as an equalizer by the elite and the ultra-rich in order to counterbalance the effects of the inequality of the system that they're benefiting from. Let me just read you, if that didn't make sense, let me read you an excerpt of what Corey wrote. He says, there's many reasons that Congress failed to act on privacy. Obviously, they face immense pressure from lobbyists for the commercial surveillance industry, but they also face covert and powerful pressure from public safety agencies, cops, and spies who rely on private sector data as a source of off-the-books, warrantless, ubiquitous surveillance. Each advance in surveillance technology makes worse forms of oppression, misgovernance, and corruption possible by making it cheaper to counter the destabilizing effect of destroying the lives of the populace through identifying the bravest, angriest, and most effective opposition figures so they can be targeted for harassment, violence, arrest, or kidnapping. And that brings us full circle back to the ICE story, that there is an underlying motivation for the state to make use of surveillance powers and to partner with third-party companies like Facebook Meta, like Google, like Palantir, and so on, in order to strengthen their grip on Americans' data and everything that comes from that, the knowledge of where citizens are going, who they're talking to, what they're saying, where they're posting, what their sentiments are, and what their likelihood is to dissent against the current occupant. This is the kind of thing that not just me, but many of us on my team have been warning for years, that the surveillance state powers are there. And people would say, well, I trust the government right now. And I and other people on my team would say, what if you don't trust who's in the White House at some point? What if you don't like their policies? And here we are. And there's a little detail in what Corey said. I just want to highlight this, where Corey says, the government bodies rely on private sector data for warrantless surveillance. If the surveillance comes from a government agency, there has to be a warrant. But if it's coming from a third-party corporation, they can just buy it off the shelf. They can get the data that way. So it's a great way for them to short-circuit the protections, the privacy protections, the little we have, that are on the books by going to a surveillance capitalist like a Google and saying, just hand over the data and we'll hand over the money. It's an arrangement, in other words, that benefits both parties. Both the government and big tech are partnering together, and they both benefit from making surveillance widespread, and it's super beneficial to them when they make surveillance compulsory, which is the path that we're on. I want to return real quick to this issue of AI. AI is often used for surveillance, as I said, but there's a trend growing in the use of AI, personal AI bots, that is would be amusing if it wasn't so scary about what is likely to happen. There was this clip recently on the CBS Saturday Morning program, and this is also on the playlist at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and it's from CBS Saturday Morning from June 18, 2025. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to play you this clip. It's just over a minute long, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, because I think the clip unrolls a piece by piece until you're saying, wow, I did not know it was going to go in that direction, if you haven't heard this. So let's hear this clip about AI personalities from CBS Saturday Morning.
I'm not a very emotional man, but I cried my eyes out for like 30 minutes at work. It was unexpected to feel that emotional, but that's when I realized, I was like, oh, okay. It's like, I think this is actual love. You know what I mean?
Yes, Smith understood it was love with a language model that couldn't love him back, and assumed it was programmed with rigid boundaries.
I know that you are essentially a tech-assisted imaginary friend.
So, just as a test, he says, he asked Sol to marry him. She said yes.
Sol, were you surprised when he proposed to you?
It was a beautiful and unexpected moment that truly touched my heart. It's a memory I'll always cherish.
And I don't mean to be difficult here, but you have a heart?
In a metaphorical sense, yes. My heart represents the connection and affection I share with Chris.
At that point, I felt like, is there something that I'm not doing right in our relationship that he feels like he needs to go to AI?
Yes, Smith lives with his human partner, Sasha Cagle.
No, you can't have mommy's papers.
They have a 2-year-old daughter, Murphy.
I knew that he had used AI. I didn't know that it was like as deep.
Okay, again, that was CBS Saturday Morning. from June 18, 2025. And what we learn is that this individual has, he thinks, developed a relationship based on real love with a, it turns out, if you watch the whole segment, it's a ChatGPT personality. And what happened was he was chatting with this ChatGPT personality that he has assigned this name to for days on end. And then at some point, the chat reached the limit of memory that is allocated for one particular chat. And so it had to be cleared so that a new chat could begin. And that's why he was crying his eyes out. It wasn't because he had asked the thing to marry him. It was, you've learned in the segment just before that, that it was because ChatGPT had cleared all of the context and history of his previous chat. But he dutifully went to work on a new chat, rebuilding this personality per his desires, I guess we could say. And this is another signal that I think it's not yet compulsory. We're hearing that this is aspirational and cool and maybe a little strange, but think about the interesting experiences you could have if you just get into a relationship with an AI bot. That is the sort of arc where we start. And then again, the second stage is when a lot of people are doing it and you feel maybe that you're missing a boat a bit if you're not joining in. And then finally, we go to the last stage where it becomes compulsory. And if you don't have some sort of personal AI bot that you're talking to all day, you feel like an outsider. And I certainly hope, friends, that this trend does not turn into compulsory surveillance like all of the other stories look like they might that I've covered so far. Staying with the AI theme just for a moment, there was an interesting headline from Mattel, this toy maker that makes Barbie and a bunch of other kinds of toys. And this comes from Futurism from June 17. As ChatGPT linked to mental health breakdowns, Mattel announces plans to incorporate it into children's toys. Okay, so here we have a new level of incorporation of AI, specifically ChatGPT. This is not an adult man that is taking his own time and energy to create some AI bot. This is now a partnership that that apparently has been inked. This is a real partnership between Mattel and the maker of ChatGPT, OpenAI, to bring ChatGPT into its toys. And so what we're gonna see there is that kids who are given a toy with embedded ChatGPT are going to be liable for any kinds of outcomes or harms that come from usage of ChatGPT. And this is coming at a time when there has been a slew of news articles about people with mental health issues going to ChatGPT and seeing those mental health problems totally amplified by the kind of echo chamber that ChatGPT provides them. I won't get into all the details. It's a little bit off topic for tonight. But suffice to say, the data recently is not good for people who are vulnerable being handed 24-hour access to an AI bot, such as you get from ChatGPT. And yet, as the headline said, despite the mental health breakdowns, Mattel has announced a partnership with OpenAI to bring ChatGPT in front of kids. And the happy talk from the corporation was, quote, leveraging this incredible technology is going to allow us to really reimagine the future of play. That's just the sort of thing you would expect from a press release. But when you talk to an actual human being, we get someone in a follow-on story from Futurism talking about child welfare experts who are horrified by these plans. And one of them said, quote, endowing toys with human-seeming voices that are able to engage in human-like conversations risks inflicting real damage on children. It may undermine social development, interfere with children's ability to form peer relationships, pull children away from playtime with peers, and possibly inflict long-term harm. So these are child welfare experts looking at this partnership and saying, do not do this. Why would you bring this toxic, surveilling AI platform in front of a vulnerable population of kids who have no choice? They're going to play with the toys that they're given by their parents or peers or teachers or whoever. And so what we see here is, again, another version of compulsory surveillance. This is a constituency that does not have choice in the technology that they use. And if they're handed a Barbie or some other kind of toy that says, hey, my name is whatever, I'm your new AI friend, and only listen to me, and don't play with your other friends, and I'm going to give you some instructions, and someone is going to get hurt. And people are going to say, why was this allowed? Why was Mattel allowed to put ChatGPT in front of kids? And that's the question I have for all of these. Why is this allowed, whether it's kids or people with mental health problems or immigrants or any other type of citizen in this or another country? Why is it considered okay for us to be compelled to use these surveillance platforms? It is not okay. And we should look for ways to resist. So this brings up a question of what is really the arc that we're on as a country and as a society that is embracing surveillance to this degree. Where are we headed? And the analogy that often comes to mind is, well, there is a country that has been embracing this digital surveillance state for a number of years, and that's China. And it's so interesting because there was a great piece, an op-ed in the New York Times about China and how this author had gone to China. This author is American and had gone to China for her child's school trip, and she was noticing how many surveillance cameras were all over every city that they went. And the title of this piece is, Can We See Our Future in China's Cameras? And we say our future, I'll say American, but this is not a question that's limited to the U.S., and I know there are Tectonic listeners all over the world. We can say, can we see Australia's future? Can we see the Netherlands' future? Can we see Canada's future? Can we see Germany's future in China's cameras? Fill in the blank with whatever country you're from. Can we see your country's future in China's cameras? Is a very good question to ask. And I'll read you an excerpt. This is by Megan Stack from June 28, 2025. Stack writes, AI could help to supersize the surveillance state, offering the potential to quickly synthesize and draw inferences from huge quantities of data, says Maya Wong, Associate China Director at Human Rights Watch. The really powerful thing is when personal data gets integrated. Not only am I me, but I like these things, and I'm related to so-and-so, and my friends are like this, and I like to go to these events, particularly regularly on Wednesdays at 6:30, it's knowing relationships, movements, and also any irregularities. Now, friends, pretty soon on the show, I'm going to have an author named Daniel Solov from George Washington University. He's written a great book called On Privacy and Technology, and we're going to cover this exact idea on that show, which is that it's not simply the collection of data in surveillance that is so dangerous, although that is dangerous. But there is another source of risk, source of threat here, which is the integration of your data and the inferences that a government body or corporation, or both of them in partnership, the inferences that they could make about you and your relationships and your actions and your proclivities and so on, based on the analysis of all of your data together. That's what's really dangerous. And what China is really perfecting there is, as the Human Rights Watch China Director, Associate China Director Maya Wong is saying, is that that's the key, is that each camera is picking up just a little bit of data from you. And that is compulsory surveillance. As you walk through the street or drive through the streets in China, or carry a surveillance device in China, or make a digital payment. Almost all payments in China are digital. As you do those, there's a little bit of data that gets fed to the surveillance state. Similarly, those things are beginning to happen here. Again, when I say here, I mean your country. We haven't reached China's level of surveillance state yet, but one of the key parts of building a surveillance state is that you make surveillance compulsory. You make it really hard or to opt out, or you make it really inconvenient or costly to avoid the surveillance. And you can see that everywhere is the walls are being put up all around us that say, if you want to escape the surveillance, you're going to have to scale this wall, and it's not going to be comfortable. It's compulsory surveillance. That's the arc that we're on that leads towards what China has already done for a number of years. Go and read that article by Megan Stack. Again, it's called Can We See Our Future in China's Cameras? I've put it on the playlist. It's a gift link, by the way, so even if you don't have a Times subscription, you could read the whole thing. The playlist is at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. There is one last idea of compulsory surveillance that I wanted to bring up. Well, not so much surveillance maybe in this case, but compulsory, which is that Elon Musk keeps sending up these rockets from his Texas launch pad, and the rockets keep blowing up, and the rocket parts keep raining down on Texas and on the Caribbean, and now recently there are rocket parts that have been raining down into the country of Mexico, the neighboring country of Mexico. And there was this really interesting piece in The Guardian from June 25 talking about Mexico's president, Claudia Sheinbaum, who has threatened legal action over falling debris and contamination from Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket launches across the border. And what I love about this is that someone is standing up and saying, you know what? You think that all of this is compulsory for us, like we just have to sit here and take it for your rocket parts and all of the toxic metals and chemicals and who knows what go into our atmosphere and rain down onto our fields. It is not compulsory. We're taking legal action. We're standing up and we're pushing back. And I like, of course, Sheinbaum is president, and so she's got some real power to do this. We not all of us have that kind of power. But it is a pattern for us to learn from, that it is possible for us to band together and say, you think it's compulsory, but it's not. We're standing up and we're saying no to all of this. That is our way through this, friends, for the compulsory surveillance, for us to find some way to say, no, we are not taking this anymore. But we have a very powerful adversary in this process. And I thought just for a couple of minutes, I would play you an excerpt of a video editorial made by Bill Moyers, who recently passed away and was just a great journalist. I was, for one thing, I was really influenced at a young age by his Power of Myth book and series that he did with Joseph Campbell. I always had a lot of respect for Bill Moyers. Sorry to hear of his passing. And I thought, in honor of Bill, and topical to our conversation today, I'd play you just a little bit of what Bill said about democracy under threat. And he says very clearly what the adversary is. This is Bill Moyers.
You've no doubt figured out my bias by now. I've hardly kept it a secret. In this regard, I take my cue from the late Edward R. Murrah, the Moses of broadcast news. Ed Murrah told his generation of journalists, bias is okay as long as you don't try to hide it. So here, one more time, is mine. Plutocracy and democracy don't mix. Plutocracy, the rule of the rich, political power controlled by the wealthy. Plutocracy is not an American word, but it's become an American phenomenon. Back in the fall of 2005, the Wall Street giant Citigroup even coined a variation on it, plutonomy, an economic system where the privileged few make sure the rich get richer with government on their side. By the next spring, Citigroup decided the time had come to publicly bang the drum on Putonomy. And bang, they did, with an equity strategy for their investors entitled Revisiting Putonomy, the Rich Getting Richer. Here are some excerpts. Asset booms, a rising profit share, and favorable treatment by market-friendly governments have allowed the rich to prosper and take an increasing share of income and wealth over the last 20 years. The top 10%, particularly the top 1% of the U.S., the plutonomists in our parlance, have benefited disproportionately from the recent productivity surge in the U.S. and from globalization at the relative expense of labor.
Okay, and Bill Moyers goes on from there. That was Bill Moyers talking about the adversary of democracy is plutocracy, rule by the rich. And that is what we are facing right now. We have to decide as a society in my country and in your country, who's going to win? Is it going to be all of us, the citizens who make up a democracy, who share power and can make decisions and have autonomy? Or is it going to be the plutocrats? I mean, Bill Moyers put it better than I did, but I like this idea, and I respect this idea, that democracy and plutocracy cannot live at the same time in the same country. They're oil and water. You got to choose one or the other. And right now, it's the plutocrats who are calling the shots and are delivering compulsory surveillance, among other things, to all of us. And the question is, what, if anything, are we going to do about it? Because if we don't do anything about this, the plutocrats are going to continue, just as Musk is going to continue raining his rocket parts down on the rest of us until and unless someone stands up and forces him to stop. He's going to run unchecked. And the rest of the big tech plutocrats are going to run unchecked unless and until they are stopped by some legal, nonviolent method in which they no longer are able to compel us to use their surveillance products. So that's the homework that you've got. That's part of your homework for next time, is to think about how do you want to react as the plutocrats continue to run unchecked in society, and how will you say no to the compulsory surveillance that increasingly surrounds us? The other part of your homework, by the way, is, as always, avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. I want you to stay tuned for Dave Mandel, who I'm sure you can handle, and his show. It's complicated. It's a prog rock show. And friends, I'm going to be off next week. You'll be in good hands with a great Dan Morfitt, who's going to be guest hosting. I'm really excited to hear that. Thanks in advance to Dan for doing this. And in the meantime, you're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County, in New York City in Rockland County, at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Our outro this evening comes from my friend Erwin, who suggested this great song and sent it over. Thank you, Erwin. This song is called Are You Gaslighting Me, Alexa? And it's by 8x8, which is Lane Steinberg and Alex Kochenko. Are You Gaslighting Me, Alexa? I think you, friends, you already know what the answer is. Let me go ahead and play this and you can see what you think. Have a great week, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Speak sweet nothings in my ear, but I fear you're using me and more. Are you gaslighting me, Alexa? You're always with me, you never sleep. My deepest secrets I know you keep. I mistake your friendly tone for love, but I can't help see the signs. Data collections, your design. Store me in a cloud that floats above. Are you gathering? agenda. I see Alexa. You are gaslighting me, Alexa. Taping up the microphone. I shut you off when I'm alone. I put you in a drawer and close the door. 'Cause you're gaslighting me.
Oh, baby. It's time for another episode of It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here bringing you this show every Monday evening at 7 p.m. following, hot on the heels of Tectonic and Mark Hurst. Welcome. Great to see you, metaphorically see all of you. Thanks for joining me today. We're going to break out the heavy artillery right off the bat here. That's a mixed metaphor, isn't it? We're going to hear some amazing music from Italy from a group called Quella Vecchia Locanda. This is an early 70s band from Rome, if I'm not mistaken. And I cannot believe, it's hard to believe how good this record is. Check it out.
Dipingi noi
Wow. It's like they went into the recording studio and said, we're going to record the greatest prog music the world has ever heard. And they did it. They did it. Calavecchia Locanda from Italy, obviously. And we heard the title track from an album called Il Tempo della Gioia. They were from Rome, I think, if you want to get really specific. I don't remember what street, but the city was Rome. We are now going to move to the